Welcome to the ProWrestling.net free podcast. Today is April 20th, 2018. I am Jason Powell here with an audio review of the Impact Wrestling television show that aired on April 19th. And it was taped back in January in Orlando, Florida at Universal Studios. Before we get into the show, just a couple of quick notes. I will have live coverage of the Impact Wrestling Redemption show coming up on Sunday night as the show airs on pay-per-view. So if you're watching the show, you can certainly follow along and check out my commentary as the show airs. And for that matter, if you're not watching and you want a update on everything that's happening, you can find out the results in real time at ProWrestling.net. Also want to direct you to the new Pro Wrestling Boom podcast with Jason Powell. That's me. And we are doing a weekly show and going long form with some of the interviews. And I've had four shows out so far, three interviews on those shows. Court Bauer of MLW is my latest guest, and he discusses the Fusion show that is actually going to be debuting tonight on Be In Sports at 7 Central, 8 Eastern time. We talk a lot about MLW bringing the promotion back, scoring this television deal after just running five shows in Orlando, Florida, the future of the promotion, why he chose the champion that he did, and much more. I really enjoy talking with Court, and it was fun to catch up with him about all things MLW. I've also had Dave Lagana, former WWE creative team member, Impact Wrestling creative team member, and currently the head of the, he's working side-by-side with Billy Corgan on the National Wrestling Alliance. You've seen many of the YouTube videos that they've released, and Dave and I had a long discussion about that and just a lot of different things in pro wrestling. And then Ring of Honor COO Joe Koff. Joe joined me before the Supercard of Honor show for about an hour, and we discussed a lot of things, including the company's relationship with New Japan Pro Wrestling, why he decided to run Supercard of Honor directly opposite the NXT TakeOver event. That was an interesting conversation, and much more with Joe. And again, you can check out the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast with Jason Powell at pwboom.com. I'm still getting used to saying .com, being the .net guy, but in this case, pwboom.com, a free show, drops weekly, usually Wednesdays, and you can subscribe on iTunes, anywhere else you get those podcasts, and like for instance, Downcast, Dogcatcher, Stitcher, the list goes on. So wherever you get your podcast, subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast with Jason Powell. And you can also follow me on Twitter if you have any questions about anything or just want to keep up on what's going on in the world of wrestling, at Pro Wrestling Net. All right, with the business out of the way, let's get into the Impact Wrestling television show. This was the go-home show for the Redemption pay-per-view that will take place on Sunday. Really hard to justify spending $40 on a pay-per-view in 2018. I think that's going to be the toughest sell here. Impact Wrestling is really the only of, I guess you'd say, major promotions, if you know, depending on what you classify as major these days, that is charging that much. You know, you can get, I mean, Ring of Honor does, but you can also get their events on their Honor Rising streaming service, and I know it's had some issues, but still, it's an option that you can get these shows at a much more affordable rate, along with a lot of other content. Of course, WWE Network charging $9.99, the New Japan World streaming service around that same price. And so it's tough to justify spending four times the amount of money that you can get an actual streaming service for a month for. And something's got to change there. What I find odd is that Impact is making this show available in the UK on their streaming service, the Global Wrestling Network, but for some reason only in the UK. Is it they don't have a pay-per-view option there? Even so, I mean, it kind of, I got that press release and it's like, okay, from Impact, and it kind of felt like a slap in the face to everybody else. Like, okay, so if you live in the UK, you can see this thing at a good rate. But if you live outside the UK, they want you to pay $40. It's a bit much. But as far as the go-home show qualities went, you know, this company was put in a bad position. Well, they put themselves in a bad position by doing business with Alberto El Patron. I mean, who didn't see the red flags there other than apparently Ed Nordholm and company, because they did business with him, and they even booked him for the pay-per-view main event on Sunday. And my thing was, you know, if they were looking at this as a potential blow-off for El Patron, perhaps, I understand to a point, but you could have done this on your television tapings when you knew he was there. And, you know, to take a chance that this guy isn't going to have any meltdowns between January and this redemption pay-per-view in late April was a ridiculous mistake. But the new main event of Austin Aries facing Pentagon Jr. and Phoenix is better on paper to me, for sure, I think match quality-wise. The tricky part for Impact has been trying to establish Pentagon Jr. and Phoenix to their viewers in just 2 weeks' time. That's all they've had to establish these guys. So what they did was they replayed the match that they had with Austin Aries, the triple threat, that replaced the scheduled main event that El Patron was supposed to be a part of at the Impact Wrestling versus Lucha Underground show that took place during WrestleMania weekend. And it was a good match. I think they're capable of better. But, I mean, they had to do something to kind of establish these guys. And they've been airing clips and things. And I think Matt Stryker was on this week's show talking about just kind of sound bites from him talking about these guys as well. And so, you know, they're attempting to establish who these guys are. I almost wonder if it would have been better off, if they would have been better off. I think it was Pentagon Jr. who won that triple threat match. If they would have been better off just showcasing him and making this a singles match, establishing that, you know, he won this triple threat non-title match and therefore he is in line for this title shot. And then you could have dedicated your time to establishing who he is specifically, rather than trying to get two wrestlers over at the same time and trying to explain to your audience, who in some cases doesn't see Lucha Underground, just who these guys are. But they went with this match, and I think basically it's because they know it's going to be a good one. You know, it's hard to imagine Aries, Pentagon Jr., and Phoenix having a bad match, and I think they're probably banking on this appealing to some of the more hardcore wrestling fans out there, this matchup. And so I'm guessing that's why they took the approach they did. You know, for only having a couple weeks time to do this, I think they did a decent job. They didn't really do a good job of establishing why fans should think that there's a title change possibility. I mean, it's pro wrestling, there always is, but at the same time, I didn't come away from this feeling like, even though Aries lost that triple threat match, they didn't build up the other his challengers in a way that made you think like, oh man, you know, his title's at risk at this pay-per-view. So that hurts. It really is pay for match quality, it feels like. But they did, you know, they opened up the show kind of recapping the whole situation with El Patron, and the broadcast team was Josh Matthews and Sanjay Dutt. In the opening match, it was the team of Sue Young and Braxton Sutter defeating Kira Hogan and Fala Ba in about 6 minutes and 20 seconds, according to John Moore's report, which you can find Friday mornings at prowrestling.net. This one, you know, John and I had a pretty similar perspective on this, in that it was weirdly timed. Sue Young has been on television for a few weeks. She's been dominant. They are rushing right into her challenging Ali for the Knockouts Championship on Sunday's pay-per-view. And so you would have thought, okay, another week of domination. No, she spent the vast majority of her time in the ring selling for Kira Hogan. And it was only because Hogan became distracted by what Sutter was doing that led to, it was like a palm strike, I think, is what Sue Young hit Kira Hogan with, and then hit her panic switch finisher. So most of the match, she's selling for Kira Hogan, who I don't even believe is on the pay-per-view. And then after the match, Allie comes out and ends up fighting Sue Young. And this would have been, the way they've done this is they've had Allie be fearful of Sue Young and this character that she's playing, and that's been fine. And I think the idea was to show that she's over that fear and she's ready for a fight. And that would have been okay had it not been for, well, we just watched Sue Young get dominated for the bulk of the match against Kira Hogan, and now she's going to get dominated by Allie in this fight too. So it just kind of seemed to work against everything they'd been doing with Sue Young leading up to this pay-per-view. Whereas if Sue Young had looked dominant in the match, and then Allie came out and had a pull-apart brawl with her, it didn't even need to be Allie dominating. It could have just been a good competitive pull-apart brawl to kind of set the stage. That would have sent the same message that Allie's not going to back down. She's over the fears. But instead, it was Sue Young getting roughed up by two different people, which just, again, goes against everything they'd been doing with her. Then they went to an LAX cinematic. Basically, the idea here was to have Santana and Ortiz put over Scott Steiner. And I like this. They did it in a way where they established, along with Conan, that he's unpredictable. He's dangerous, Scott Steiner is. But they didn't come off as fearful of him either. You know, it was kind of just establishing the unpredictability of Scott Steiner. And I thought this went well, because you don't want those guys just, you know, the badass LAX duo suddenly showing fear of someone. So I thought they walked that line pretty well here, and the whole segment was pretty consistent with what they normally do with LAX. You had the broadcast team check in and hype the match from WrestleCon that they were going to show in the main event segment. And then we went to Mackenzie Mitchell interviewing Jimmy Jacobs, who had Congo Kong with him. And Jacobs started talking about how Mitchell is pretty. And he said that people like her and Johnny Impact are handed things their entire life because of how they look. And Jacob said that Mitchell and Johnny both live in a bubble. And he said he understands they don't know better. And he said Kong is going to rip Johnny out of the bubble, mangle his body, shatter his cheekbones, and gouge out one of those eyes. And he said he wants Johnny to look in the mirror and see a monster staring back at him. And Jimmy said he's a princess and he always gets what he wants. Yeah, it was okay. But there was more with Jimmy Jacobs a little bit later that actually was better. After a commercial break, we had a video package that recapped the events involving Sami Callihan, OVE, and Eddie Edwards, and this is setting the stage for the six-man tag with Callihan, the OVE duo, and against Edwards, Moose, and Tommy Dreamer in the House of Hardcore match that'll take place on Sunday. And then for some bizarre reason, the broadcast team quickly set up the Global Wrestling Network flashback match of the week. And it was 8 minutes. I actually timed this, yes. Call me a dork if you want to. But it was 8 minutes of Bobby Roode against Kurt Angle from, I think it was the 2011 Bound for Glory. I don't know why they chose this match. And then it, like, you're sending, so you have a pay-per-view with two guys who are in the main event that have not been established on your television. And yeah, you know, I've also credited them for doing a pretty good job of you know, scrambling over the last 2 weeks to accomplish that. But you also have guys like Drago and Aerostar, who are working an undercard match. If you watch Lucha Underground, you know them. If you watch Impact Wrestling, you're like, who? And they gave us 8 minutes of a Roode and Angle match out of nowhere. There's no hype. There's no pitch for Global Wrestling Network in here. It's just like they're filling 8 minutes of television time by showing a classic match while they have the Global Wrestling Network graphic up there. I don't know why they don't try to sell their streaming service. Little things would help this so much. And okay, think about this. You're going into an Impact Wrestling pay-per-view, and TNA, during its time, had the horrible reputation for screwy finishes and everything else, and just making you feel like, I wasted my money watching this show, right? I think many of us will agree on that. So what, they pick a match that ends with a kind of a cheap finish. It was Angle getting the win while I think it was Roode had his hands on the ropes and the referee just missed it. Like, is this really what you want to remind people of going into your pay-per-view? So this made absolutely no sense. One little thing, if you read my hit list today that I mentioned, just a suggestion for them. If they insist on airing these matches, well, I mean, again, number one, tell people what the Global Wrestling Network is before you go to this. Give them some hook for ordering your streaming service. But also, how about captions popping up on the screen that add some context to this? They kind of did that with a short-lived show that they had. Wasn't it like a Saturday morning show or something that Mike Tenay was all over? I can't remember, but do something where you're giving people who have seen the match or just don't give a damn about watching a classic match something extra. You know, you're just getting 8 minutes of some random match they pluck out of their archives. So how about adding some details about, you know, just something people might not know about. Doesn't even have to be about that match in particular. It could be about the talent in the ring. And also, in the caption, you know, promote for more matches like this one. There's the Global Wrestling Network. Something. Give us some reason that these exist beyond just, well, we had 8 minutes of TV time to fill. From there, they went to KM in the ring, and he basically issued a challenge, but he made it clear he didn't want to face the Mooses of the world or Falaba. He wanted to face people like Dwayne Gill, Brooklyn Brawler, Barry Horowitz, and I think he said D-Ray 3000, the Musketeer. So he basically wants to face the enhancement guys, if you will. And then instead of getting those guys, a guy like that, he got Brian Cage. They missed the money shot, which is KM's facial reaction, you know, his expression reacting to Cage's music hitting. So we never saw that. And this just led to a brief match between the two. The KM won in a minute and 32 seconds, and it was all him, and he won with an F5. And as John pointed out in his review, Josh Matthews said it was almost like an F5, even though it was an F5. I get what they're trying to do with Brian Cage. You know, he's Goldberg, basically. He's their Goldberg. He's just plowing through people, and they're hoping people kind of catch on to that. You know, get behind him because he's been dominant. This guy's beaten Bobby Lashley twice, who meant he was the dominator in Impact Wrestling. That was the way he was billed, and that's what he was, and it should have meant more. Some of it was the live crowds were pretty lethargic for both of those matches, and I blame a lot of that on just, well, it's deep in the tapings, it's the Impact Zone, they're overexposed, all of those things, it's tourists, whatever you want to say. I totally get that. But I'm also looking at this going, what is there to get behind with Cage right now? If you're just a viewer, forget about being there in person. Okay, he's a guy who shows up and he's dominating, and that's, you know, that's, it feels like they have that piece of the formula down and that's about it. It's not like we hear from him. It's not, and I get some of it, he's silent now, but I'm hoping at these next tapings, we're going to start to get some reason to kind of get behind the character. We don't even really know what the character is right now, other than, well, he's just a killer in terms of what he does in the ring, and he's impressive, and I think he has a lot going, and I think he's a good guy to build around, no doubt about that. But we need more than that, obviously, because it doesn't seem like fans are just, you know, getting on board with this and are super excited about it. And I think there's a way to help make Cage connect with those fans, and that hopefully they're going to get down at these next tapings. But on the flip side of this with KM, look, they get excited about, or they got excited about him because they've thought it was funny that he played a Biff Tannen-like character, you know, Back to the Future character. And that's what the whole thing has been. And he's a big guy. He has a decent look to him. Why not give up on this undercard thing that they're doing? Because that's really what it is. It just think if like they had spent the last couple of months giving him, I'm not saying he needed to plow through people like Cage has done, but just making him feel like he's more than just in doing a Biff Tannen impersonation. And he won even more matches than he's lost. You know, I mean, for all I know he has, but I don't really remember that. There's nothing really memorable about the character other than, oh yeah, he's doing that Back to the Future impersonation. He's a guy, look, they've lost so many people in this company. They don't have, they're struggling to really find any sense of depth right now with all the departures. So why make this guy just kind of a forgettable undercard, mid-card guy when you could build him up to mean something? Cage beating KM, had KM been protected to any level, I think could have meant something, but it didn't. It was just another win for him. Then we went to Josh Matthews running through the redemption card, and they also announced that Drago, is it Drago or Drago? I think it's Drago. Maybe I'm just getting my, I watch Lucha Underground. I should know this, but I think I'm having flashbacks to Rocky, but talented guy at any rate. I'm looking forward to seeing him again. I do enjoy his work, but he'll be facing Aerostar on Sunday. Then we got a video package on Congo Kong and Jimmy Jacobs, and this had a lot of Jimmy Jacobs comments throughout the whole thing, and he talked, it was all new stuff, and he talked about being shot into the world against your will, and you have to get something out of life because one day you'll go back into the ground, and just like that. And he said you have to figure out what to do between the moment of creation and the moment of destruction, and he said you have to make the most out of it. And he said he met Congo Kong 18 years ago, and life is funny. He said things come full circle amongst the chaos, and he said people speak about Abyss with fear, and Abyss has a fun legacy. And then we saw clips of Congo Kong, well, really throughout this, and he said that Johnny is a bunch of pretty that Kong is about to take away. And he said, he talked about how Kong is about to mutilate some of that beauty, and he said Kong's actions are going to do the speaking for him, and there will only be one monster in the end in Impact Wrestling. So, not bad. Better than we've seen from Jacobs so far in Impact Wrestling. I still don't know that they really have this, that they've really nailed this just yet. I think when Jacobs showed up, when he ended up in Impact Wrestling, I think they just assumed everyone knew who he was from Ring of Honor, or because he had gotten a lot of publicity for leaving WWE, or being let go and then showing up at the end of that Ring of Honor pay-per-view with the Bullet Club guys. I want them to explain who he is, you know, and this kind of helps. I think at least it gives him a direction. But I do have a big issue with the presentation of Jimmy Jacobs and Kongo Kong that we'll get into in just a second. Because the next match on the show was Johnny Impact fighting Kongo Kong to an apparent no contest in 7-10. The finish of this, Kong, they set up a part of the ring steps on the ring apron. And Kong ended up picking up Johnny Impact on his shoulders and running him into the barricade face first. And there was blood and everything else. This was technically, that was the finish of the match. So it may have been a DQ, whatever. But yeah, I mean, and John made the comparison. It was like a lawn dart. So if you remember Kevin Nash throwing Rey Mysterio into the side of a trailer like a lawn dart, it was similar to that. Only it was, you know, at ringside and was with the ring steps. And I like the use of blood here because I think you need to establish Kongo Kong as just this, you know, dominant monster. And yeah, I mean, look, we've seen him perform some impressive moves for a big man and all that, but I think for the character he is trying to play, it's hard not to look and think there's a little bit of potential Abdullah the Butcher here. And I don't know if you want to bring out a fork and do all of that in 2018, and do some of the things that Abdullah did. But I think they need to do things to make him really come off like this bloodlusting monster. And so this was a start, but I don't think they go far enough with it. Some of it is on Kong. His facial expression seemed to consist of blank stares and occasionally sticking his tongue out. I want to see him act more crazed. And the other thing that I've noticed is Jimmy Jacobs always acts like he's in control. He's always smiling. It's like he's the puppet master here. And I don't think that's the right approach when you're managing a monster. It can work. I think, you know, Jim Mitchell was a guy that kind of worked for. With Kong, I would actually make it seem like Kongo Kong is so out of control that even Jacobs is worried, you know, that he's just trying to, hang on by a thread to keep this guy under his control. Not that he fears him necessarily, but that he fears what he's going to do to his opponents. So when he runs Johnny Impact face first into the ring steps, I don't want to see Jimmy Jacobs taking pleasure in this. I want to see Jimmy Jacobs be fearful of the ramifications, the fallout, what could happen to Kongo Kong, and whether, you know, is he going to stop there, kind of a thing. We've seen Paul Heyman do that with Brock Lesnar. I think you go back and even an element of Friday / Kim Chi back in the day trying to control Kamala. I think, you know, Kamala would ultimately do what he said, so it's not the same thing. But I think there's a way that Jimmy Jacobs could enhance this character and the monster qualities of Kong by making it seem like he's out of control, because it doesn't feel like he is. It feels like he's doing exactly what Jimmy Jacobs wants him to do. And I think this should be more about Kongo Kong being a monster than about Jimmy Jacobs having control over him. So that's one way that I would try to just really establish that Kong is this, just like I say, bloodthirsty monster that they're really not doing. He doesn't come. I thought this was a step in the right direction, though, in terms of trying to establish him in that way. But I think a couple of tweaks and it would be more successful. Then we went to Josh Matthews talking about how Jacobs and Kong didn't want the match, but they wanted to send a message, and they showed Johnny Impact being tended to by paramedics. And then we had a video package on the Women's Championship match for the pay-per-view, and also a Petey Williams and Matt Sydal video package. I got to say this, like, Petey Williams and Matt Sydal are probably going to have a good match on Sunday. I don't care about it. We've seen Petey win the X Division title how many times? I don't care. You know, there's no real hook there for me other than, well, they should have a nice match. The characters, Petey's been okay. It seemed like he peaked the first week or two back, and they really haven't done much with him. And as far as character development goes, and Matt Sydal is just kind of a mess with this whole Namaste and Josh Matthews thing right now. Coming out of a commercial break, we had an Eli Drake video package, and then we had Mackenzie Mitchell interviewing Drake backstage, and John nailed it when he said he did one of his rock-like promos. I've been pretty high on Eli Drake. I think there's real potential there. But he does need to kind of tone down some of this rock stuff. It really does come off as a cheap knockoff impersonation at times. And I think this guy's got a lot of talent. He doesn't need to bank on that. I think he needs to tweak the way he's doing things so that he does come off like Eli Drake and not as Well, this guy who's impersonating Dwayne Johnson. And Scott Steiner ended up walking in. He's teaming with Drake to challenge LAX on Sunday. And he said that he likes Drake's style. And he said Conan just carried his bags and is a bitch. Then we had the broadcast team run through the redemption card again. So I'll give them this. It's not like they've just ignored this show. There was an awful lot of hype for Sunday's event. And then they cut to Melissa Santos at the Impact Wrestling and Lucha Underground show. And then it was Josh Matthews and Sanjay Dutt on commentary for this. At the actual event, it was Matthews and Matt Stryker. So I just wanted to update the commentary here, I assume. And then in the fourth match of the show, it was what aired at WrestleCon on the Impact Wrestling versus Lucha Underground show. It was Pentagon Jr. defeating Austin Aries and Phoenix in a non-title match. And it was good. It wasn't so good you have to see the rematch good. And I was, on paper, it's a very attractive match. Put it this way, I think this was fine. It didn't, like, if I was on the fence about seeing the show, would I have been compelled to order based on this match? No. But at the same time, I do feel like they're capable of much better. I think the second go-around should be pretty damn good. They really haven't sold me on Pentagon Jr. or Phoenix being a threat, even though Pentagon Jr. won this match. I didn't come away feeling like, ooh, man, this guy could win the championship. And granted, they only had 2 weeks to put this together. And that's why I say it may not have been as good of a match, but they may have been better off going with just Pentagon Jr. challenging Austin Aries for the championship. And at least you could have sold that he won this match and really, really focused heavily on him rather than trying to get him and Phoenix over all in 2 weeks' time. But I think they're just going for what's the most attractive match that's going to try to cater to the, you know, or bring in those hardcore fans to watch this show. So, it's not the worst logic. I'm just kind of looking at it from a storytelling standpoint and trying to get people connected on that level. It may have been better just to focus on one individual rather than trying to focus on both of these guys. And then one more trailer for the Redemption pay-per-view aired, and that was it. That was your Impact Wrestling go-home show. So a ton of mentions of Redemption, I give them that. They certainly were working hard to get people to, make people very aware of this show and obviously trying to convert people into buying. The big question, though, again, are people going to be willing to dish out 4 times more than it costs for a streaming service? Now, if you're in the UK, again, you can watch the show on the Global Wrestling Network, so that's nice for those fans. In the in North America, elsewhere, it's going to be a little bit of a tough sell, I think, trying to get people to plunk down $40 when they're used to spending $9.99 on the network. And again, New Japan around the same, and Ring of Honor around that price. And Impact Wrestling, I don't think they have a ton of control over that. I assume that's a pay-per-view company decision. And somebody needs to get through to these cable companies. Maybe they just feel like there's a small window or small number of people who are going to order it, and we're going to try to get that audience to pay as much as we can get out of them. I guess if I'm them, I'm taking the long-term approach of going, we want people ordering these shows. So if we take a small hit this time, hopefully it's going to lead to bigger and better things down the road, but that just doesn't seem to be the way this works. But again, I will have live coverage of Redemption on Sunday night, so feel free to join me at prowrestling.net as the show airs, and then afterward, I will be doing an audio review available exclusively to members of prowrestling.net. For membership information, visit pwmembership.net. Thank you so much for listening. Check out the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast with Jason Powell at pwboom.com, and have a great weekend, everybody. Thank you so much for listening.